Hello, friends. Trying to get more of these episodes out as soon as I can, but for now, here's an episode that Jeff and I recorded about a month back that we haven't released yet, so enjoy that, and I'm lining up some great interviews to do some more episodes this month, and this month we also have the National Council on Problem Gambling's annual conference that I will be attending, and I'll have some stories from that to share with everybody after, towards the end of July. So, in the meantime, enjoy this episode with Jeff and I. And of course, thank you to Gamban for sponsoring this episode of the podcast. If you need blocking software, please use Gamban. Gamban supports this podcast, so please support Gamban, as well as Epic Risk Management. They both are great supporters of this podcast, so thank you to the both of them for taking care of this episode of the podcast.
Hello and welcome to All In, the Addicted Gamblers Podcast. My name is Brian and I have not placed a bet since July of 2014.
And my name is Jeff. I haven't placed a bet since July of 2015.
Jeff!
Brian. You know, I came on here and it said the meeting was ended by the host. I got a little bit worried.
I logged in and then I gambled.
You are so bad.
I didn't gamble. Gambling's bad. Don't gamble. No. It's not bad. It's bad if you're like us and you can't do it.
That's right.
Jeff, I didn't want us to do any pre-talking.
Yeah, I know.
I wanted to just go and record.
No foreplay tonight.
Jeff and I have not talked to one another like this in podcast form in a couple months.
Yeah, it's been crazy, man.
Time has flown. I went to West Virginia without you.
I know. And I wanted to hear about it. I mean, I got a lot on my list to go over with you. West Virginia is on the list.
Country road. Take me home.
You went when we had our conference in Delaware, right?
Yes. I left that morning, early that morning.
Right. That's the 20th of May.
But I heard from other people who attended your conference that they got to see people from the group in person, and I was jealous as hell.
Yeah, it was really fun. It was fun.
So who goes first in this situation?
You.
Well, let's before we get to that.
Yeah.
Before we get to that.
Yeah.
Jeff.
Right.
I have taken a job. So that's why the podcast has not been out as much as it was before, because I have a full-time day job.
I know. And that's number one on my list to ask you about.
Well, it's good. I'm not going to get into talking about the job. All I'll say is it has to do with gambling recovery.
Okay.
So I'll go that far.
All right.
So it's in line with the podcast.
Are you enjoying it?
Yes.
Good.
Yes.
Good, good.
I am, but I don't know what I'm allowed to say. I haven't figured that out yet. So I'm not going to say anything of who it's for or what it's with or sure. Why it happened or any of that. It'll slowly spill out over the course of time, I'm sure.
All right. Well, let me just ask you a question. And then if you don't feel comfortable answering,
ask away.
All right. So this job that you have, I feel like we're on a game show. This job that you have, do you engage in the work at home or in an office?
In an office, but part of it has been at home because I don't know if you could tell from my voice when we first started, but I've been sick recently. So
yeah,
I did have to engage in a little bit from it from home.
Wow.
But mostly in an office.
All right. And you already said that you are enjoying the job.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a full-time job?
Full-time.
Okay. And you are using your lived experience, would it be fair to say?
Yes.
Okay, great, great. And that's exactly the kind of job that that you can get passionate about, right?
Yes.
Awesome, awesome.
Passion I have. In fact, I guess it's not too much to say that when you and I see each other here in less than 2 months at the National Council on Problem Gambling's annual conference in Boston, Massachusetts.
Yep.
You will also see some of my coworkers. So it has to do very much with gambling harm, well, helping those who have suffered gambling harm.
That's awesome. I'm very happy that you have this job that gives you enjoyment and value. And I'm sure that you do a great job. So
you know, it's that value piece that you say that it does. It, mm-hmm. it, 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 It gives purpose. You and I may not be getting some sort of Conan O'Brien-esque type dollars for this podcast, but I don't think it's a stretch to say that because of this podcast, I was able to apply for the job that I eventually received.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's pretty clear anybody that listens to you on the podcast and otherwise, but certainly on the podcast, knows your passion and knows your quite frankly, knows your ability to communicate and to connect with people. And those are all important components, right? I'm sure.
Those are all important components. One might say, if you peer into the mirror,
yes,
and look, look, you might see other peers.
Really?
This is a very long way. I am a peer specialist. We'll just say I'm a peer specialist.
You're a specialist in my book, my friend, and you're my
I am a peer specialist for gambling harm.
That's awesome. That is
in my day job. But I missed the podcast and I've gotten to do a couple since this job happened, but not as many by any means as we were doing. And so here we are on a Sunday night before Memorial Day, before the 3-day weekend actually kicks in, because right now it's just a normal weekend.
Yeah. I mean, let's be honest. You and I have talked about doing a podcast for several weekends. Like, let's do a podcast again this weekend, right?
Like 6 weeks now?
And something always comes up, right? But this weekend we were determined to do it. And you followed through. I give you the credit for that. And here we are. And it's great. It's great to see you.
We were not deterred. We were deterred.
I would never call you deterred. So listen.
You are deterred. Are you not? You are deterred.
So can we let's catch up a little bit, just on a personal level, right?
Sure. Yeah. Let's
do that. How's the family?
Very well. We went to a neighbor, our neighbors in my neighborhood, as neighbors are generally, they had a birthday party for their daughter who turned 18. So we were over there today all day. And my tiny little 3-year-old got to run around and play with people she normally doesn't get to play with.
That sounds good. I mean, yeah. I mean, it's certainly better than a 3-year-old's party at Chuck E. Cheese, I guess.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. With an 18-year-old's party, we got much better food than just pizza at Chuck E. Cheese. There were ribs. There were pieces of chicken. I would have said there was chicken. But
yeah.
I started with there were, so I had to say pieces of chicken.
See, your job is causing you to be very, very deliberate in the way that you speak and make sure that you have the right grammatical.
Speaking of the way one speaks, yes, Jeff, sir. I'm curious.
Yes,
how have you been?
I've been great. So wait a minute, but I'm not finished with you yet.
Mm.
And again, so your family's well, I'm glad.
All well.
All right. And
other than illness that got me this past week.
Yeah. Yeah.
I blame West Virginia for that. West Virginia.
Really?
Well, I mean, where else did I get sick from? It had to have been West Virginia.
I don't know. I mean, it just seems like, well, it's obvious. It's not COVID, right? It's obviously not COVID related.
I took a home test and then I went and got tested because after I took the home test and it was negative, my wife was like, well, you should go get tested. And I was like, what's the point of having a home test if I have to go get tested?
Yeah. But it seems like so many people are getting COVID now. That's all I hear about.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, at least where I am. In fact,
we get COVID.
Good.
General illness.
General illness. And that, look, that still exists, right? So how is Nicole, and send her my regards. How is she doing?
She's very pregnant.
Well, that's where I was headed.
And is ready to be done. And we're approximating 3 weeks.
That's awesome. Well, since I spoke to you last, speaking of pregnant and ready to be done, my fourth grandchild was born.
Well, I saw pictures. We've texted about this.
Yes, but
didn't get to do it on here.
Right, right. Anyway, no, I know that. And it's hard to believe. Four
tiny Wassermans.
Well, two of them are actually Millers. Two of them are Wassermans.
two tiny Wassermans, two tiny Millers.
Exactly. And
heir to the Miller Lite fortune. Boy, oh boy.
I wish.
Oh, is that not accurate?
Yeah. But you know what? I shouldn't even say I wish. That's not high on my priority list these days.
Is being an heir to anything?
Yeah, being an heir to anything. I'd rather be on air with my friend Brian.
Oh, I see what you did there, and it was magnificent.
I still got it.
It's like you haven't left the microphone.
Oh, I haven't. Yeah, I mean, I don't obviously do podcasts because you're the guy that I do the podcast with, but
unless you're cheating on me with another podcast.
I am not. I promise you that. I have not done a podcast since
Jeff
probably
said, you know what? Brian's not doing podcasts anymore. I'm going to start the Jeff Wasserman podcast for gambling harm.
Exactly. If you really want a good podcast, come and listen to mine. No, but seriously, folks, I am in front of the microphone a lot, but that's because of our Zoom group. Oh, well, our virtual group, and we
your
do Zoom meetings.
Support group that you started years ago and has flourished to where it's like constantly I'm seeing new people introduced.
Yeah, it's been awesome, and I was going to tell you this before tonight, but I figured I'll wait for the podcast. I might as well tell you on here. I got an email from somebody who had listened to the podcast of when we had, I think it was the last one that we did together with Sam, and said, I listened to the podcast with you, with Jeff and Sam, and
Sam Starsmore,
and she got my email from the podcast because you announced it, and asked if I could welcome her to the group.
Join us at
DCGP.org.
It's a lot of letters in a row.
Yeah, I'm
join us at DCGP.org.
Yes, a Delaware Council Gambling Problems.
If you want to join Jeff's Zoom meeting for stop, what happened?
Oh, look at that. What happened? What's going on?
Holy cow.
Oh, man, this is
sexy time up in here.
Yeah, sexy time. Wow. All right.
If you want to join Jeff's group for stopping gambling, it is for stopping gambling. It is not to control gambling.
Not at all. And all you have to do is have a desire to
this
stop
is a
gambling.
Desire. You don't even have to be stopped. You just have to want
to
stop.
No, we'll hopefully support you to stop, but if you have to want it, right?
It is my great privilege to be a part of that group, even though I haven't shown up in a little while. But the people in that group are what make it special. Everyone in there is focused on helping one another not gamble and getting through the hard urges that come about from stopping gambling.
Yep. It's been very, very... It's been a great experience. That's all I can say. It's been a great experience. And at the same time, it reminds me how harmful this addiction is to people that experience it. And it's sad. It's sad in a lot of ways. It's sad because the landscape of gambling now makes it so much more difficult, I think, to stop and remain stopped, even when I was, when I started recovery, nearly 7 years ago, and you started, I mean, we weren't inundated with these advertisements and commercials, and it's everywhere. And
may I just say, it's not just the ad itself, but the ad itself is guaranteeing you a win.
Oh, absolutely.
It's saying bet five, win 200.
Exactly.
And that right there is when you go, well, I've lost everything. I might as well bet five and get 200 and use that free money to try to win back my other money. And that's a hard thing to turn down. So
it really is. And in fact, our good friend and the person that replaced me as your traveling buddy to the West Virginia Conference, Stevie D. We call him Stevie D.
Well,
he go?
No. So the plan was to make a bit of a a documentary about what happens in West Virginia. That was the plan.
Okay.
And unfortunately, it did not all come together. And so we were unable to do that. So I just went as a participant, not as somebody who was who was filming it. So it was just me who traveled down.
Oh, so Steve didn't go.
He did not go.
Oh, that's a shame. Okay. Boy, that's a long trip for.
But anybody would be lucky to go because it's, as Jeff knows, it's a fantastic weekend.
Yeah, I was very disappointed.
We'll get
it
into more of that. But
yeah. I was disappointed it happened to fall the same day as
people asked where you conference. People asked about you.
Really? They said,
oh. Yeah, they were like, where's the other guy?
Oh, I thought they said like, oh man, I'm glad you left him home this year. Yeah. But anyway, well, I mentioned Steve because he talked about that it's not only the ads, but it's the way that the marketing is in terms of free bets and things of that nature. That's, you know, for some of us, that's disturbing because it's very, very enticing.
Yeah. Offering you free money is very enticing.
And especially when the free money maybe isn't as free as one would perceive it to be, right? There are all these little
It's not like you bet five, win 200 and can take $200 out and go spend it on food. No.
Exactly.
You generally have to gamble that 200 through several times over.
Right. But anyway, Steve, and I don't know if you saw this or not, Brian, but Steve, who has been of late the subject of a number of news stories.
Number.
Right. Yeah.
He's taken been, over for us completely.
Man, we were never even at that.
You would
level.
Think that we didn't even exist.
No, anymore. No, this guy's a star, man.
This guy has, and good for him because he dealt with fantasy sports and we did not. And so he's a little more in tune with sports betting, which is more what today's gambling is versus what you and I did.
Exactly. And he's a great spokesperson.
Yeah.
And role model, quite frankly, for recovery. I mean, he's been through a lot. His wife, you had them both on the podcast, and his wife contributes a lot too in terms of giving the perspective of the affected other, especially the spouse.
Yeah.
And they do a great job in terms of raising awareness. So Steve had mentioned to me, I don't know, probably a couple of months ago, that he was speaking with a journalist from the USA Today network who was doing a story about New York and the impact of mobile sports betting and how the operators have really flooded the market in terms of advertising and free bets and things of that nature. And Steve mentioned that during the course of, I guess, his conversation with the journalist, I guess, you know, our group came up and make a long story short, she ended up contacting me and I'm not one to shy from sharing my opinions and feelings. And
you?
No. In fact, I think I spoke to her probably for two separate occasions, probably over an hour each occasion because
good.
And anyway, there was so the article came out. I'll send it to you, Brian, for you to look at. It's called New York Mobile Sports Betting Ads Flood Market Target New Users with Seductive Offers.
Seductive.
And I'll tell you something about that word seductive. During my conversation with the journalist, that's the word that I use to describe these free bet offers. I said it really, you know, they really try to seduce people to gamble by offering these free bets and other, you know, free things, you know, risk-free, free bets. You can gamble for 24 hours and never lose. They'll get your money back. You know, all these kind of gimmicks, marketing ploys, which, I mean, I get they're in business and they try to market it favorably. The problem, of course, that we have with the type of business that they're in is that it's a business that for some people like us causes harm.
Yeah.
And then there should be a level of responsibility if you're selling a product or providing a service that clearly results in harm to a segment of the population. You know, we think that there should be some level of responsibility in terms of protecting people. But, you know, you can look at the article and read the story, but it's at a minimum, I think everybody would agree that the volume of ads and commercials that include these offers of free bets and risk-free for 24 hours, 48 hours, whatever it is, you know, is quite enticing. And sadly, it entices people that shouldn't be gambling because of the harm that gambling causes them. And I thought the article was very well written and really drove home the point. So I was happy to, you know, to be a part of it. And Steve's doing great things. So anyway, that was something that I wanted to share with you, as well as that we began in our group. And I don't think we talked about this, did we, in the podcast last time, that we began two new meetings for younger members, for under 30, which, of course, you would not qualify for. I have to say
I'm an old man, Jeff.
Yeah. I mean, now that you've turned the big 40,
right?
Right. You don't even qualify for the under 40 group, which we haven't yet introduced, but maybe we will after tonight.
I still look like I'm 15, but I would not qualify for anything.
In fact, I was going to ask you about that. You know, when is the gray hair going to come?
Oh, it doesn't, Jeff.
What do you mean it doesn't?
I am delightfully young and therefore no gray hair.
You're delightfully young.
Delightfully young.
All right. I may be
40 by age, but age is only a number and it doesn't affect my hair color. This is not unnatural. This is natural.
You know, it's funny that you know, we're talking about this. I have a brother who's 5.5 years older. So he was just 72 and he has very little gray hair. You have to look close. And I always say that he must dye it, but my sister-in-law swears that he doesn't.
Well, you have a very nice haircut, though.
I was accused in the meeting today of wearing a toupee, which I don't have a toupee. I mean, if I had a toupee, they should be removed from that meeting right away. And if I had a toupee, it would really be a very bad toupee because I still have, you know, the anyway.
No.
Let's talk about things that may be of interest to other people.
I think our hair is definitely of interest to others.
Oh, this is great. This is great. I know this is going to be, what's the word I'm looking for? Published, posted. This is going to be posted, this podcast, right?
Jeff,
this,
when you say that, it makes me think like you don't understand podcasts.
What are they called now? On the computer, right?
Jeff, for 311 episodes now, they've all been posted or published, and you don't understand that that's what happens at the end of this conversation?
No. I didn't properly describe what my thought, and that is that you and I have done podcasts before.
Correct.
And we didn't put them out. Right?
Oh, yeah. We've had plenty that we did not.
Yeah.
I don't know, five or six, we just said, you know what? No.
Yeah, because it sort of went into a direction that probably was not.
I would say that it had this energy, but it had no form to it. And at the end of it, we decided, you know what it was?
What?
It generally came after an argument between the two of us.
Yeah, or sometimes during.
And then we decided, why would we want to air our grievances towards one another to everyone?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, when you said it came after an argument, it was actually a conversation
in the midst to
resolve any kind of issues that may have existed.
But then it seemed very self-serving. And so we didn't put it in.
But it did serve us, right?
It helped us. We talked it out. We chatted it out. That's why talking helps, because it solves those insecurities that might cause arguments.
Exactly. So I was, I passed by your area a few days ago.
I did not remember getting a text that said you were in the area.
No, I didn't send one, because I knew I couldn't stop and see you because I took the train from Wilmington to Providence because I was
down Providence way.
Yes. I was invited to participate at the Rhode Island conference, which they had last week, which was wonderful. Which, you know, what makes these conferences so great, in my view, at least in terms of my perspective, is especially now when you get to see the people that you know from just being in this community, right? Some that you've never met physically, some maybe that you haven't seen in a while, and that's what I got out of the conference in Rhode Island, of course. Plus, they had great sessions and was all geared towards the criminal justice system. And Carolyn Hawley, who you know, was the keynote. And I got to see Carolyn, which was great. It was fun seeing her. And it was a really good day, but it was a very quick trip. I went up by train one day, stayed overnight, went to the conference, and that night went home.
And did you deliver a masterpiece of a segment?
No. it was a little bit, I have to say, it was a little bit different than what I'm used to. I'm used to, you know, doing a session or, you know, a presentation. But the folks at Rhode Island had asked if I would be available to talk about what we did in Delaware in terms of connecting with our judges and court staff to familiarize themselves with problem gambling, addictive gambling, and its connection to the criminal justice system. And that largely involves what's called bench cards that I prepared. And bench cards are cards, literally cards, that are on the bench where a judge sits. And the judge can look at the bench card, if he or she so chooses, in order to read the information and either remind them of certain information pertaining to an area of the law that they may be dealing with, or just to educate them. Mm. And of course, in our case, it's gambling addiction. And the bench card basically gives some fundamental information about problem gambling, and then resources, and then some statistics in terms of the relationship between gambling addiction and crime. And and we were very successful in having that done in Delaware. And this was a couple of years ago before COVID. Mm-hmm. I was supposed to present actually at the Rhode Island conference with I believe it was supposed to be with our friend Shirley.
Yes.
And with Michael Burke. And the three of us were going to do a panel, but of course COVID hit, everything started to get postponed.
I'm sorry, what hit?
COVID.
What is that?
It's this little bug that's unique to the state of Rhode Island.
Oh.
Yeah. And
small state, small bug.
Small bug, very small.
That's why I haven't heard about it.
But anyway,
what happens in Rhode Island stays in Rhode Island.
Yeah. I always tell this story because I, as you know, because your wife is went to URI, University of Rhode Island, as did I. Not at the same time, of course.
That'd be hot.
Right. But I went from Rhode Island to Delaware.
Yeah,
I would have to be one of the very few people that moved to Delaware from a smaller state. I just thought I'd share that with you.
It's pretty hard. Yeah.
oh, boy. I hope we do post this podcast.
Your state, you wouldn't even think, like, if somebody said draw Delaware.
Oh, boy.
I seriously, years ago, I would have drawn a rectangle somewhere on the East Coast, but it's not at all. It's like an eye.
It's a long state. It has some length to it.
It's just filler.
Well, yeah.
You live in filler.
Which is close to Philadelphia. And I'm bummed. Oh, man.
Oh, it's good to see you. Listen.
Yes, sir.
My throat's a little scratchy. I'm going to grab another beverage because...
yes, do that.
I have dealt with this scratchy throat for too many days now. And so I'm going to pause. Press okay. That. We'll come back and we'll hit up West Virginia.
Excited. I tell you when...
you may tell me after the show. Jeff, I went to my first in-person GA meeting in 7 years the other day.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome. And is there anything that motivated you to do that? Or is that something
work
you've wanted to do? Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. I wanted to check out the local meetings before I went off and recommended them to people.
Great idea. So what was your experience like?
Well, it was in fact, all white men, small handful, but they were all good and nice and stuff. So I can't.
What about age-wise?
I was the youngest.
By how much?
There's another one who was probably around my age.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest were a little older and a little older and much older.
Mm-hmm. But nobody younger than you?
No. Unless so, the guy, I mean, it was hard to tell with the other guy, but.
So that's the shame. Where are the guys in their 20s and 30s?
They don't want to go to those meetings. That's why they're in your support group.
Well, some, but in fairness, there are some.
I think those meetings are wonderful. I can get along with people who are not my age, but I understand that not everyone can. And therefore.
Right, right. And, you know, and quite frankly, starting the meeting, the two meetings that we started for the younger members under 30, that's not to advocate that, oh, if you're under 30, you should only be in a meeting with people that are under 30 as well. This right. way you can. No, I think it's important to be exposed to people that have been in recovery for a long time, people that maybe have gone through their own challenges with recovery, such as multiple relapses, people that have gambled differently than you did, people that have experienced different harm than you have, because that's where we learn from each other. We don't want to just be with the people that have experienced the same things that we have gambled the same way that we have, and are early in recovery like we are. That doesn't give you the full picture. Having said that, though, I think that it's really important initially when somebody comes into a support group,
right,
for them to feel a connection. It's that connection that hopefully will allow them to expand their view and their opinions on what they think would be of value to them in their recovery. But you have to have that connection, because if you go to a meeting like the one that you attended, as good as it may have been in terms of content, if you're 20 years old and you walk in there and you see a 40-year-old is the closest in age to me, and then everybody else is older, as you said, quite a bit older and much older, it's really difficult to make that connection, especially because you're in a mindset typically that you don't want to be there in the first place. When you're 20, your parents are making you go there, right?
Yeah.
So I think just make that connection and like go through with some other people that you relate to. And I think that makes the world a difference in terms of maintaining, you know, any kind of time in recovery. But we'll see what happens. I was just talking to somebody about the whole sports betting thing, and I'm more convinced than ever that we're just seeing the tip of the iceberg in terms of people that have been harmed. Because, you know, think about our experience and how many years, especially me, but you as well to a certain degree, that you went through before you disclosed that you had a problem and actually was serious about getting help. And there's people that are sports.
6 years before I went to a GA meeting.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, the people that have been engaged in sports betting now and in the last couple of years, even, they're still hiding it. You know, if they have a problem, if they are developing these kinds of, you know, unhealthy gambling behaviors, they're not telling anybody, and they're having a much easier time in hiding it than we ever did, right? Because they don't have to make up a story of why they're getting in the car and driving to a casino. All they have to do is pick up a phone, right? So it's sad, but I think that they're really, this is the tip of the iceberg, and we're really going to see people experiencing harm. And
it's weird, though, isn't it? Because some people, based on when it was legalized and when you hear about people reaching out and phone lines exploding, they call within a few months and they look for help. I called within a few months, but did I reach out for help? No, I waited and waited and waited. I went under the guise of writing a paper instead of reaching out for help. Mm-hmm. And if I had just said, you know, I want help, what do I do? Instead of, I'm writing a paper, can I get this information so I can make up my own mind without anybody watching me? And that's what I did. And that did not work, because then I just caused myself more harm. And all that harm added up to me finally going to a GA meeting 6 months later. And then even then, it wasn't like I went to the GA meeting, got anything out of it. I went to the GA meeting doubting it before I even walked in.
Yeah.
And it was 7.5 years later before I went to a GA meeting that made a difference. Seven and a half years is a lot of paychecks to lose before. And also a lot of time lost. A lot of like my whole life has disappeared. Like all my friends had graduated college and I'm still like, I can't even hang on to my paycheck from 2 weeks ago.
You know, that's one thing that, of course, I didn't experience in my active addiction phase. But you, and I hear from a lot of others, have experienced the whole notion of watching your friend sort of advance in life.
Yeah.
Professionally, in relationship wise.
It fucked me up a lot more than I think I've talked about.
Yeah. That's got to be so hard. It's a constant reminder that you haven't progressed.
Right. Yeah, because I think for a long time I was fighting my age. And it's like, if you mess, I messed up my freshman year of college and all my friends were then a year ahead of me, but I didn't care because I was like, whatever, they're still in school. I still got time to get ahead of them. Well, getting ahead of them never came. And so all of a sudden they were all graduating college. And I'm like, what happened in the last 4 years? And then they're all going on to either graduate school or getting married or having kids or whatever they were doing. And not that those were my goals, but I was still 18 in my head. I was still this kid who just graduated high school who had been screwing up for years and years and years. And so I hadn't progressed at all. And that weighs heavy on the mind, I think. And that weighs so heavy that I don't think people realize when you're that young and you're just screwing up over and over that it takes a toll that I didn't realize. I mean, depression-wise, it took a toll. Mm-hmm. Like where I was all of a sudden incredibly depressed and couldn't figure out why, but it was because all of my friends had done what they were supposed to do and gone on to college and graduated. And I was still living at home with my parents. And that just weighs on you. Mm. I mean, when you feel like the party is over and you're the only one remaining at it, that is an awful feeling.
Yeah.
Like everybody else woke up and went home and went to work that day. And you woke up and said, let's keep partying. But there was nobody around to party with. So you just kept partying by yourself. And that is a gross feeling. I don't like it. I mean, it gives me the heebie-jeebies when I think about something like that. It makes me.
But even I'm sure at that stage, I mean, even the people that, you know, don't have an issue with addiction, it's a tough stage when you're trying to figure out, you know, is this the occupation or profession I want for my whole life? Is this, do I want to now, you know, get married and I'm losing my independence, but yet I'm gaining you know, this next stage of being an adult, or maybe even being an adult for the first time. I mean, there's a lot of conflicts there, I would imagine. And then if you are almost apart from everybody else that's going through it together, because you're still at square one, living at home, you know, not, you know, spending your paycheck before it even goes through, making a minimum, you know, wage type of a job, or having a minimum wage type job, that makes you think, like, what's the purpose of my life, or where am I going, or what's my future going to be like? I mean, that expands the sadness from, yes, I'm losing a lot of money gambling, or yes, I'm losing a lot of time, to this global, you know, view of what's my life going to be like, right?
Yeah, because it wasn't like I was going through college on the side.
Right.
Like, well, I'm later than everyone, but I'm going to get there. I had my dream was a low percentage dream in itself. Right. Like I was dreaming about Hollywood and all of that, and getting into that path. And so it was already a low percentage. So you throw in not graduating from college, and it's like, I never thought about tomorrow. I never thought about tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Ever. And you know, people who, again, I'm not here to compare myself with people who gambled and were married and had graduated college and started gambling after and all that.
Right.
But when you don't graduate college and you barely graduate high school, and you can go get an hourly position somewhere, and your whole hopes and dreams are low percentage anyways, it's hard. There's nothing to fall back on. It's not like I was gambling hundreds of thousands of dollars that I had. I was gambling paychecks of $12, $13, $14 an hour.
Yeah.
And working two jobs to gamble that. And then if the fail safe was, if I lost, I moved back in with my parents. Like that's, it wasn't like, oh, I confessed to my wife and tell her that I've been gambling this extra money we had. No, it was, I moved back in with my parents. And at that point, there's not much after that. Like once you move back in and they bail you out once, there's not a bailing you out second time, and there's not another place to move to. And so dating during that period was awful, because all you have is, like, luckily I had going up and being on stage in front of people. And so I could talk about that on a date, be like, this is interesting. But I couldn't talk about my hourly job that sucked. That's not interesting. Whereas other people's jobs, when they go out and they graduate from college and they get a job and whatever, they're a teacher or whatever, you talk about, oh, these students are crazy and all that good stuff. Yeah, you have something to talk about. You graduated college. You have some credit to show by graduating from college. I didn't have that to show. So my credit to show was, I get up on stage in front of people and I do jokes. Mm-hmm. But they're like, oh, but what do you do for money? And then once I'm like, well, then I worked this shitty job for money, but, and I had to move back in with my parent. Like, there's just nothing good about any of that. And it feels horrible.
Mm. You know, it's the old, false perception that the public has, that if somebody has a problem with gambling, it's just money. You know, it's just, they're losing too much money. I would suggest, unless you have personal experience by either have gone through some of the things that you described or that I went through, or you have somebody very close to you that has gone through it, you don't really appreciate the depth of the harm that this addiction can cause, and the breadth of it. I mean, it just, relationship wise, occupation wise, self-esteem, you know, making you examine, do you have a real purpose in life?
Think is huge, purpose in life.
Yeah.
Because at that point, like, my purpose was to win, so I didn't have to worry ever again.
Right.
And I won, but it was never enough.
Nope.
And if I did win, like, you know, you put it back. You gamble more and you put it back. So there was nothing else going on in my life except for gambling. Like, gambling was the life. And when you lose at gambling, that's it. you lose at life. Like, I've already been at college. I got kicked out of college. You know, I didn't have any good relationships because I was gambling the whole time. I had to move back in with my parents. They're disappointed. They're also, I mean, they were probably scared for me as well. Cause like, sure, what the hell are you going to do with the rest of your life?
Right.
And once you start to hit mid 20s, dreams and shit like that go away. Like, oh, I had this dream and what am I going to do now? And then, you know, eventually you kind of realize like, oh, I have more time than that. You know what? You know what? I can be 30 and still make it as what I want to make it as. But that comes and goes as well. And then eventually, you know, I was 32 when I stopped gambling. I was like, what the hell do I do? I was 32 living with a 72-year-old and a 99-year-old. What the hell am I going to do with my life? And that's what I think gets, that's what causes people to be so suicidal with this addiction.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And you know, and you weren't even in the position I'm talking about, and you were suicidal.
No, but you know, I was in a position where I had to think about some things that are very similar. Once I lost my job and knew that I couldn't return to my profession, certainly in the short term and probably forever.
Yeah.
I had to, at the age of 59, think about, well, what am I going to do with the rest of my life?
Right.
Because I couldn't.
Which is way scarier than me at 30.
And yeah, I mean, especially my friends are talking about, you know, that they're in that pre-retirement stage and starting to slow down. And I'm worried about where the hell am I going to make money, which, of course, we need because of what I pissed away gambling. So, wow.
It's so hard in life to be like, what is my purpose? What do I have? If you have a purpose, you probably feel pretty good, regardless of financials. If you can live and have a purpose, you feel better. And so like right now, my day job has given me some, like the podcast is great, but the podcast never paid bills. I couldn't survive on the podcast alone. The day job has given me purpose in that it's taken, because on the podcast, I'd say we talk about gambling addiction from a macro level.
Right.
The day job has given me purpose on a micro level, and in that I'm one-on-one with people who experiencing gambling harm. And that gives you a little more purpose when you can see somebody's face. And you've been doing that a bit longer than I have. And so it's been nice to have that sort of purpose.
So have you, and I know, like you said, you've been doing it for a short time. Have you experienced watching somebody grow and knowing that you played a role in that growth?
No, not in the day job. In the podcast, yes.
Right.
But not in the day job. It hasn't been long enough. And again, like, you know how hard it is to get people into recovery and all that. So sadly, no, during the day job. But, you know, it's slow growth during the day job. It's.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, and it should be, because you don't want people to approach, at least this is how I look at it. I don't want people to approach recovery like some of them have approached gambling. All in.
Hey, that's the name of the podcast.
There you go. But I mean, you know, because I've seen so many people come in, let's say to our group, and all of a sudden they're just like in love with recovery. Man, this is great. I never thought that there were people like me. And now I can go to a meeting and I can share shit that I've kept inside for so long. And I can't even tell my best friend or my girlfriend or my significant other. And they just feel amazing. But for a lot of them, that's short-lived, because you can't maintain that level for any kind of, you know, medium to long term. It just doesn't it doesn't happen in any area of our lives, right? I mean, let's face it, the excitement of something new and experiencing something for the first time, if you connect with it, I mean, that's just a great feeling, but it doesn't last.
Yeah.
And sometimes if you don't know when you're in recovery, I think that this state of euphoria, this pink cloud, right, doesn't last. Then you're going to have a rude awakening when something goes downhill. Okay.
I was just gonna say, can you give the definition of the pink cloud?
So I think, you know, the pink cloud is, you know, thinking that because you're in recovery and you feel so good, almost euphoric, if not euphoric, that it gives you an unrealistic view of what you can expect going forward in recovery. And the in my opinion, the unrealistic view is that everything's going to be wonderful. I'm not gambling. I found people that I connect with, a place to share my concerns, my struggles, my successes. Everything's going to be great. And we have to remember that life doesn't work like that, that there's going to be shitty days and there's going to be challenges. And, you know, I always tell people that I think they have the best chance of committing to recovery right at the beginning, because what drives them there is the pain. You know, nobody wants to connect with some random person that they have a name or they found on a social media site and say, yeah, I'm willing to get on a Zoom meeting with people that I've never met before and hear everybody share their struggles and their issues. And I mean, nobody wants to do that. And what causes those persons, or many of those persons that actually are courageous enough to do it, I think is the pain. It's that raw pain. I mean, you know, nobody comes in after a big win.
I won. I want out of this.
Yeah. People have thought, you know, okay, now this is the time to, I mean, of course, we all think that, but are you going to go to a freaking GA meeting that night saying, oh, I just won, you know, X amount of dollars, so I'm coming to GA, you know, religiously because I want to stop. That's a very, you know, too bad that people that are listening can't really take a look at that beautiful pink cup that you're drinking out of.
It's my child's cup, and it's what was clean.
Hey, that's a great measure of of your decision.
You're so right about the pain. Like, you walk in and you just want the pain to be relieved, and it takes a while.
But you know, but think about it. It does take a while. But think about the raw pain, the sharp pain. Okay, even in my case, I think, and from what I hear from others, I think that real raw, severe pain, I think that goes away fairly quickly. I think you're left with that sort of more of a deep internal, you know, sadness. But the raw pain, I don't know. I think the raw pain that would cause somebody to go way out of their comfort zone and disclose their addiction to their parents, if it's somebody younger, and go to a meeting with a lot of old people sitting around the table. Man, I always say, I don't think the thought of having a wonderful future and a great life without gambling is enough to make them do that. I think it's the pain and desperation that they're feeling, because that's where gambling has taken them, and they really don't have a choice. They can sort of see the writing on the wall that this shit's not going to get any better, and I'm not going to be able to control it.
We can't end the podcast on this such a somber note.
No. See, the beauty. Okay, here we go.
All right.
The beauty of this, Brian.
Yep.
Is look at us now.
Look at me now.
So you, my friend, who went through your informative years of not knowing what the fuck you were going to do with your life and not having direction and not having a purpose.
I had nothing until I was 40.
Yeah.
That's messed up.
Well, not until you were 40.
Yeah.
You better hope your wife's not listening to this.
But what I was going to do, like, yeah, I got married and had a child, but like that, but.
Oh, he's. Watch him sink lower and lower into the quicksand.
Uh,
But this child did not give me purpose in life, Jeff.
Listen, the child gave me plenty of purpose, but you still, you have that desire to somehow be something, make a difference. I don't, you know.
Well, the point is, okay, the point is, look at you now. You're a husband, you're a father of one, soon to be a father of two.
But anybody can do that.
Okay, wait a minute. I'm just getting started.
All right.
You've done such amazing stuff with the podcast, and you yourself know how many people and how many lives you've affected in a positive way. And now you're actually getting a paycheck for some of that stuff.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Which is very cool. And I'll go back to the question that sometimes we laugh about, because I'll say to you, so Brian, are you happy?
I'm listening to my chair squeak. I blew my opportunity, didn't I?
No, I think that was beautiful.
Yes, but there's those moments, you know, where you're like, what I wanted to do versus what I am doing. And I think that I have come to the point where I've accepted what I am doing is fulfilling what I wanted to do. Wow. And that makes me happy. I would not have said that a couple of years ago, I'm sure.
Right.
But now, seeing what a difference one can make by just talking about one's addiction, I think is very satisfying. It's like you order a steak and you don't get a steak and you get tofu and you're like, well, I didn't want tofu. But then you start eating the tofu and you're like, well, it still satisfies my hunger. So what the hell do I care what it is that I'm eating?
Right.
As long as the hunger is satisfied.
That's right.
And as long as I can compliment the chef. And so I get to compliment the chef every day for what I have and what has fulfilled my hunger. And I didn't think of it that way before. I thought like, well, no, I'm still not getting to do what I want to do and all this crap. But in the end, hey, I'm alive. That's huge. After that.
Yeah.
And you know that very well.
You know, the thing is that we don't compare ourselves as people in recovery. We don't compare ourselves to the general population who have no challenges and no struggles and don't have these kinds of issues that they try to figure out. That's the norm. Everybody goes through that. And like you said, you know, if I thought, okay, yeah, I'm happy doing what I'm doing, but am I really doing it at the level that I originally thought of or in the form that I originally thought of? I mean, who doesn't go through things? These things are what we go through normally in life, right? And that's, to me, what recovery has given us, the opportunity to address the challenges of life without having gambling basically drown out everything else. And not only that, but I think that recovery has taught us, well, has given us tools that we can use in thinking about these kinds of things and developing our own, you know, plan in life and how do we deal with challenges, etc. That people who haven't gone through a recovery program, whatever it is, you know, don't have those tools because they've never experienced it. Because how many of our friends sit around and talk about, you know, what's made them happy or sad that day, or what they can do to feel better, or are they really, you know, giving to the people that they love in a way that is healthy? I mean, we don't talk about that.
But this is what I've...
My New York accent really came back.
This is what I've missed, Jeff.
We don't talk about that. You know, we don't talk about it.
This is what I miss by not having you on as often, as I don't get the...
babbling and...
No, not the babbling. The word is on the tip of my tongue. But I don't get...
Whatever it is, you don't get it.
I don't get it without you, Jeff. I've missed you. Speaking about recovery.
Yes, sir.
I have to thank the good people at First Choice Services of West Virginia for allowing me to come down last weekend to their annual retreat that they do. And I saw people that you and I saw the first year we went.
Okay, cool. Did you, and new people as well?
New people, Jeff. That's what was incredible. Yeah. Is the first year we went, I didn't feel like I had anything to offer. It was my first year there. And
right.
This year I went, I felt like I had a little something to offer. And I chatted up the new people.
That's awesome.
And so this retreat lets anybody with 1 day to 30 years, what, you know, maybe more. And that's what's brilliant about it, is you get to hear all this, these gems of wisdom from people who have been in recovery for years, and they talk about it openly. And that was really great. And I had the privilege of talking to this couple who gambled together.
Mm.
I, of course, when they walked in, thought one's a support person, one is a gambler.
Sure.
But no, they were both gamblers. And I got to talk about them because they were roughly my age. And it was not only an absolute, I mean, I'm sure it was meaningful to them to be able to come to the weekend and leave with the information they left with, but it was wonderful for me to be able to talk to them and see what they're going through and remind myself of what gambling does to me and to them. And then I did get to offer my little bits of wisdom to them, which was very nice. And it makes you feel good when you get to do something like that. But yeah, I saw people who knew you, and I can't thank the good people of West Virginia enough for inviting me down to come and be a part of that, because it's so meaningful to me to be able to, you know, a meeting is an hour, a retreat.
Oh no, it's
is
great.
A weekend. And an inpatient is 30 days. So you get this time, this experience with people who are in the exact same situation you are in or were in or currently. Mm-hmm. And so it was just a beautiful recovery experience, as always.
That's awesome.
And you
were... I missed going. I really did. But I have to ask you this. I mean, just remembering our last visit in West Virginia.
Yeah.
One of the things that I recall very fondly was stopping by Cracker Barrel, because you really wanted to have those biscuits and gravy.
Yeah.
And I wondered, since you were on your own and I didn't know if you were rushing to get there, did you stop at a Cracker Barrel?
So I did not. And here's why.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm 8.5 hours away from the retreat. So I had to get up early and get out the door. But what I was able to do was have lunch. So when I lived in California, my landlord / roommate, Georgia, she lived in Southern California, and I rented a room from her when I moved to California. But when I left, she also left, and she moved to the other side of the country, just to the other side of the West Virginia border into Maryland. And so I looked up Georgia and I said, "Hey, Georgia, I'm coming down to West Virginia. Can we get lunch?" And so I was.
You are kidding me. Wow.
I had lunch with Georgia, and it was wonderful. I got to see her. I hadn't seen her in years.
Yeah.
And we talked, and it was wonderful, man. It was like these life moments that are so meaningful come out in recovery. And I got to have one of those with her.
See, that's why we're not ending on a sad note, but on a note full of hope, you know, and just to demonstrate, we are resilient. And let's face it, Brian, you and I mean, I'm going to say we're not unique. I was going to say we're not special, but we're special. We're not unique in the sense that...
I'm special, Jeff.
I know you are. But we're resilient. And why we are able to have a meaningful new life in recovery is that we're committed to it. And we've done the work that it takes to do it and to have it. And to me, that's the key. So there is hope.
There's always hope.
Even with those free plays.
Fucking free plays, man. And fucking hotspots in West Virginia. You're crushing the good people of West Virginia with these hotspots.
Oh, hotspots. Okay.
I loved my experience in West Virginia. And anytime I get to go, I will always love my experience there. The people there are wonderful. And those in recovery and those who are just entering recovery there are just, it holds a special place when you get to meet them in person. And so,
but you didn't sing.
I was asked if I was going to sing, and I thought, oh, I can't sing without my singing partner, my duet partner, Jeff.
Yeah.
So I did not sing Country Road, but if you want to take us out on a high note here, I don't remember exactly how it goes, but I think it's something along the lines of
Almost Heaven.
Almost Heaven.
West Virginia.
West Virginia.
Wait. Blue Ridge Mountain, Shenandoah River. I could have not, maybe that's not the right words.
Let's cut to the chase. Country Life road, take me home to the place I belong.
West Virginia.
Mountain mama.
Take me home, country road.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good. It wasn't as good as when we could sing along with the actual singer of that.
Yeah, John
Denver. Oh, Jeff, I had back surgery.
What?
I had back surgery. Yeah.
When was this?
About a month ago.
Like surgery?
Yeah, like he went into my lower back and I had a disc that was protruding on a nerve and sending pain. And now I am pleased to announce that after 11 months of dealing with this, I think I'm pain-free. So 11 months later, so now I can look at the positive side of life and say, oh, it's time to exercise again and get on that. Because we talk a lot about exercise. Mm-hmm. I just had the nutritionist who presented when you and I were in West
Virginia. Yeah.
She was just on the podcast a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, how about that?
And it was pretty great. And so you combine exercise with the nutrition, and because a lot of people in recovery, it's not just about stopping gambling, but being a better person. And you can be a better person through exercise and nutrition and all of that good stuff. So.
Yeah, definitely. That's awesome. So did you actually have a disc removed?
No, he's shaved off some of my bone. So that
ablation, way ablation.
Is that, the nerve wouldn't hit it. I don't know.
Like burning.
A laminectomy.
Oh, you did have a laminectomy.
Oh, it was a discectomy / laminectomy, but I don't think he concentrated on the disc. He concentrated on the laminectomy.
In any event,
was shaved it off some of my lamin.
Was it outpatient?
Outpatient, yeah.
So, and you feel great.
I didn't feel great at first. Yeah. In fact, I called him and I was like, I still hurt. But be patient, now, son. He's like, it's gonna take some time to recover, Brian. You gotta,
yeah, don't relax. Fucking call me at home anymore.
Yeah, quit calling me. and I'm in a much better place. So that has healed me mentally, because for almost a year I've been dealing with this pain, and now the pain is non-existent.
That's great.
So I wish all of you a pain-free day
and a bet-free day, bet-free.
Don't take the free bet, because you know what, in the end you're just going to put the money back, and that's what sucks. So don't fall for it. Be like Jeff and I and say fuck gambling. We're here to recover and not gamble, and get our joys other places in life, like with friends and family. So
exactly, meaningful shit.
And you know what, friends mean a lot. So Jeff, you are my friend, and it has been a pleasure to see you again and to talk to you again. And I very much appreciate our time together.
And we will be together in July.
We'll be together. The
National Council on Problem Gambling annual conference.
About seven short weeks.
Gambling Addiction and Responsible Gambling 2022. I just read it right off the brochure.
Okay. Well, I'm going to ignore the responsible gambling part. And I'm just going to say that, we're going to talk about what we can do better in life without gambling.
Exactly.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. This has been a joy to talk to Jeff again. And check out, Jeff is available on Twitter at
JPWDEL1955.
You can email the podcast at leaststreetpod@gmail.com. You can join Jeff's support group at
joinus@dcgp.org.
And check out the Bet Free Life on YouTube. That's what I do with Christina. Guys, it's been a real pleasure to be back into talking to Jeff. And I miss this, and I hope we get to do more of them. Thanks all for listening.
This podcast is owned by Lee Street Media, LLC. Music provided by T-Vance. Remember, This is a podcast. The views expressed on the podcast are solely those of the hosts and the guests. If you need help for a gambling addiction, please seek professional help.